Blog Talk Radio.
If it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchDailyCast.com. Good Sunday evening for April 7th, 2024. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks coming to you live. If you're listening on PWTorchDailyCast.com or if you're listening on delay Monday or Tuesday, thank you for joining us. But we are talking WrestleMania Night 2 here on a Sunday night. That show just concluded, so if you want to be a part of this show, you are welcome to. 515-605-9345 is the number to call. If you want to ask us some questions or give your thoughts on tonight's show, you can press 1 to show up on the switchboard. If you just want to hang on and listen, that is fine, too. You can also email us. I know it's late on a Sunday night. People have to go to work early tomorrow. So if you want to send us an email with your thoughts, wnialivecast@gmail.com. I have the emails open and we'll get to them during the show. So without further ado, back for a second night of talking about WWE and WrestleMania. It is Brandon LeClaire, PWTorch.com contributor, who followed along with WrestleMania with his live alternative perspective report on PWTorch.com. Brandon, good to have you along once again.
Glad to be here.
So I thought, just generally speaking, I was positive about night one. I did think there were some pretty significant flaws, but I thought overall it was a good show, decent show. I thought Night 2 blew that show out of the water and was just that much better even. In a lot of ways that Night 1 had flaws, Night 2 kind of fixed those, right? Night 1, the crowd didn't seem as engaged. Night 2, the crowd felt hot all night. Night 1, there were some matches that we look forward to that probably didn't live up to the hype. Night 2, we had some matches that maybe we didn't think were going to perform all that well, but were pleasantly surprised by. So I thought Night 2 won in a lot of places that Night 1 lost. What did you think of Night 2 overall and then compared to Night 1?
Yeah, we talked a lot last night about how, you know, last year it was sort of the inverse. So you had the real big celebratory moment for KO and Sammy at the end of night one. And then night two, of course, was a bit of a downer given that, you know, people went in expecting Cody Rhodes to win. And then of course he loses, Roman Reigns retains. And it's kind of the same ending shot that we've grown used to for the last several years with Roman Reigns coming out on top. And I you know, suggested last night that I thought that they were going to reverse that. And of course they did in fact reverse it. And so I think just by nature of how the show was booked, you end up with a much more satisfying show tonight and a satisfying conclusion. And I agree. I think you had matches tonight that probably either over-delivered in some respects or were just really unique. And I'm pointing specifically to the opener, which I thought was, you know, subverted expectations some. I thought that that was just going to be a really well-wrestled, strong title match, and instead we got something totally different. And I'm not arguing that that was a bad thing. I think that it worked and did exactly what it needed to do, but it was surprising to see where they went with that opener. And then there were some other matches on the card that I thought were better than I would have hoped going in. So, yeah, I mean, I have overall very strong positive feelings for night two overall. And I think in totality, looking at this night, you know, in conjunction with last night, I think that this is a WrestleMania that would and should be viewed very favorably for many years to come.
So we'll get to the phones in just a moment. We've got DJ standing by, and then we've got some room after him. So if you want to get on, 515-605-9345. Just to run down the card to make it official, I guess. First of all, Stephanie McMahon came out and introduced the show after Triple H did so last night. So that was interesting. You know, a lot of this, Brandon, was a new era. You know, Stephanie talked about it. The announcers talked about it and put it over. The announcers hammered home the idea that this is pro wrestling. They didn't sugarcoat it, saying it's sports entertainment. So, you know, it did feel like WWE was leaning very heavily into this idea of the new era, the unsaid message being this isn't Vince McMahon's WWE anymore. Did you get that same sense as well? And did you, if so, did you think it was the right move?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely felt like that was the message that they were sending. I think that anyone who's been watching the product for the last several months already had a pretty good indication that we were living in a new era. I think that the product has improved all around, both from a major live event standpoint, from a television standpoint, certainly from a production standpoint. So this felt more like a public declaration and a coming out party than it did an actual transition, because I think the transition happened quite a long time ago. It was interesting to see them be so forward and public facing about it. I think that having Stephanie McMahon out there was a way to keep the McMahon name alive within the WrestleMania brand. Yeah. And I'm unsure about it. Look, we don't know whether Paul Levesque will eventually be named in any way, shape, or form in the Janelle Grant lawsuit. We do know, however, that Stephanie has been named publicly, not as, you know, an assailant or anything by those measures, but that she had some knowledge. And so to include her tonight in some ways to me felt like a bit of a pushback, I think, against the notion that the McMahon name should be erased from the company. And also, you know, in some ways a victory lap for this new era. Now, would they have felt this compelled to go so heavy-handed on crowning Paul Levesque as the new head of the company if they weren't absolutely certain that there was no way that the public would ever find out that he had knowledge? Or do they just not care?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it certainly, you know, makes you think that they're not concerned about the implication of Triple H in the Janelle Grant lawsuit in terms of the knowledge that he had, or, you know, even if he had knowledge, that may not sway WWE in taking any action. So, interesting choices as to who was spotlighted and who wasn't, for sure. We can read a lot into that. Drew McIntyre defeated Seth Rollins to open WrestleMania Night 2. He won the world title, but he did a little bit too much celebrating, let's say, in the face of CM Punk, who was out doing commentary. Punk beat down Drew, which allowed Damian Priest to come cash in. Brandon, I don't know whether to talk about this now or wait. This is pretty big. Okay, so we'll talk about the bookends. We'll talk about match one. We'll talk about the main event, and then we'll go to DJ and any other callers who want to chime in. What did you think of this booking decision to have Drew win it such a short amount of time? Did you like how it played out, or would you have rather seen Drew walk out of WrestleMania as champion?
Yeah, so a lot of moving parts here and a lot of evolving opinions as I kind of work through this. So as I alluded to when we started the show, I really liked this match, and I liked the presentation of it, because I think that it really subverted my expectations, and not in a bad way or even necessarily a good way, just a different way. I expected a certain thing out of this match. I just expected Seth and Drew to go out there and work a really strong back and forth match the way that they did, you know, back on at a premium live event in the fall and then on Raw in the wintertime. Instead, what we got is a 10-minute finisher spam match. So kind of taken out of the Brock Lesnar style playbook of main event matches. And they were clearly attempting to tell the story that Seth Rollins was a beaten man, and he was he was struggling with injuries suffered during last night's main event, and that Drew McIntyre thought that he could use that to his advantage to end the match early. And so McIntyre was just unloading everything that he had right out of the gate, thinking that he could catch Seth off guard. And Seth, for his part, responded in kind by realizing that, hey, this guy has got me up against the ropes. I need to throw everything at the wall right now. And so unlike some of those Brock Lesnar main event style matches where it just felt like finisher spamming for the sake of finisher spamming, I thought that this made sense. I thought that it worked for what the story was coming into the match, especially given that Drew McIntyre was so hell-bent on the idea that he wanted a Seth Rollins at 100%. He wanted a good match. He wanted to you know, entertain the fans with an incredible title match and win the title fair and square. And Seth didn't give that to him. So Drew felt it necessary to humiliate him and embarrass him and try to, you know, get this done quickly. And so I thought that the match itself worked incredibly well in that regard. And hilariously, I did notice that Drew sent out a tweet when he took the phone from his wife at ringside. And I saw the tweet shortly after the match, and it was just LOL bored at work, which was a great touch. So I really enjoyed the title win. And then, you know, Punk has the little confrontation with Drew. It pops the crowd big. And at that point, I'm in the back of my head, I'm kind of thinking like, okay, they might bring Damian Priest here. And of course they do. So I'm of two minds because I thought the setup and execution of the moment itself was excellent. I think teasing the idea that Punk is going to get involved. He takes off the brace. He uses the brace to you know, crack McIntyre in the head with it. But he can't get much more physical than that. You're setting up the Punk and McIntyre match when Punk is ready to go. And then you have this opportunity where you have a Money in the Bank winner who can come down and cash in on you know, a crestfallen McIntyre. I love the theory and the execution. My issue with it is that I am just not a believer in Damian Priest. So I expected and believed that Priest should fail to cash in. And I know that the argument against that, the argument for putting the title on Priest, is that so many of the recent Money in the Bank winners have failed to win, to successfully cash in the title. And my response to that essentially is I don't really care. I think that the importance should be placed not on whether or not the Money in the Bank briefcase has credibility and whether or not the championship that is being won has credibility. That world title was created as a secondary championship to Roman Reigns' Universal title. Seth Rollins did an incredible job making it worthy of being the secondary title, making it worthy of the creation in the first place. But it hasn't changed the notion that it is the secondary title. And Roman Reigns and The Rock didn't do any favors to that championship on the way to WrestleMania either. So to me, you want to keep that championship as strong as possible by having it on strong characters. Seth Rollins was a strong character. Drew McIntyre is a strong character. Damian Priest is not a strong main event character. And so for that reason, I have my reservations about it. But like I said, I'm torn because the execution of the angle I thought was excellent.
Well, if it gives you any solace, I think there's real question as to how long Damian Priest will hold the belt. He doesn't strike me as a real long-term champion. So there's that too. I mean, that should be considered as well. I guess I'm not as down on Priest as you are. I don't think he's the second coming or anything like that, but I think for holding what you accurately described as the secondary world title, I don't think I have a problem with him. And your description of the execution of that angle in the post-match was spot on. I agree that that was really well done. I think the story coming out of that, you know, how thirsty Drew was for that title. He finally gets his hands on it, and hoisted by his own petard, he, you know, flies a little too close to the sun. I'm throwing out all the metaphors here, all the all the hackneyed phrases to describe what happened to Drew after the match. But you know, tempting fate and all that, and all of the vitriol that Drew McIntyre spewed at CM Punk over the last few months came home to roost. There's another one. As Punk got his revenge on Drew. So I thought that was super smart and super well done and super well executed. I loved the whole thing. I think, you know, I don't mind, again, I don't mind Priest having the title for as long as he does have it. Gives a new spin to Judgment Day, I think, with him being the major champion and Rhea Ripley being champion as well. So I think that's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. The main event, Cody Rhodes over Roman Reigns. We have a new Universal Champion for the first time in several years, actually, that we can say that here on Wrestling Night in America. There, you know, we expected a lot of pomp and circumstance. We expected a lot of interference. We expected a lot of gaga, if you will, throughout this match. And we got it, and then some. Ultimately, Cody Rhodes won the match. And I think, Brandon, just as important as what happened in the match itself was the post-match. The celebration, the likes of which you don't usually see in WWE for title wins. The baby faces coming out, hoisting Cody Rhodes up, his family entering the ring, Cody calling out Bruce Pritchard and Triple H to kind of join in the celebration. You know, hugging Michael Cole after the show, and just all of that really cemented new era, whatever you want to call it, but really cemented the idea that Cody Rhodes is the guy, and this was a big deal, and it should have been treated as a big deal. When you beat Roman Reigns after this long, I think it should be celebrated in a major way. It should not be Cody Rhodes getting the pin, he holds up the belt, and 30 seconds later they're off air. You know, so I thought that the celebration was over the top in a great way, because I believe it was commensurate with the major feel of the win. And so I like that. I thought the match itself, you know, going in knowing that, expecting a lot of nonsense and how it all tied together. You know, John Cena was the one who attacked Solo Sikoa because Sikoa had beaten Cena before. Jimmy Uso was attacked by Jey Uso, who had, you know, they've been feuding. The Rock being attacked by The Undertaker. I was hoping for Stone Cold Steve Austin. I thought that would have made it a little better, but, you know, Undertaker and Rock have a history too. So I used the phrase ghosts of bloodline past on social media at Greg M. Parks when I was describing what was going down, and that's kind of how it felt like, as every Bloodline member had someone from their past coming out to take them out. The Seth Rollins stuff, I think, you know, when you throw so much at the wall, there's going to be stuff that you can nitpick or stuff that may not work as strongly as the other stuff. I think Seth Rollins getting attacked as soon as he came in the ring wearing the Shield gear, it felt like a miss to me. And then you had Reigns hitting Rollins in the back with the chair, mirroring what Rollins did to Reigns to break up the Shield. And in that moment, Reigns lost the title because he took his focus off Cody Rhodes, put the focus on Rollins. And I think that might be something that some people are missing when they're saying, oh, you know, a terrible weekend for Seth Rollins. Oh, you know, he was buried tonight. Like, Seth was really the reason Cody won, because it was Reigns' attention that was on Seth rather than Cody that allowed Cody to attack. So, I mean, there was layers to this when in a good way. You peel them back, and there's just so much to discuss here. Brandon, what did you think of the match itself, all the stuff that happened in the match, and then the post-match as well?
To speak on the Seth thing first, I think that the complaints of Seth being buried and Seth having such a bad night and weekend overall, I think you can pretty much alleviate that concern if he doesn't get taken out when he first enters. Like, if he gets a shot in or two on Rock or Roman, I think that you can alleviate that concern, because you're right. The crux of his involvement, the final stanza in this, you know, epic interference fest, was selling the idea that when finally given the opportunity to avenge the destruction of the Shield all those years ago, Roman Reigns could not help himself. He could not take the opportunity to turn the tables and pay homage to that moment. And that, in the end, is what cost him his title. So, and maybe that's one of the one knocks on commentary, if you could have any tonight, is that they didn't draw so much attention to that. But it's hardly a complaint, because there was just so much going on. And Cole, for his part, was just masterful tonight. I mean, just an all-time performance from Michael Cole in that main event. And as for the match itself, I thought that Cody and Roman wrestled a really strong match before things, you know, devolved into chaos. I wasn't expecting that, to be honest. I really thought that they would go a few minutes and Roman would do his normal shtick, and then we would get a plethora of interference for an extended period of time. And they circumvented that expectation. I thought that we were going to see a pretty extended beatdown from the Bloodline before the Avengers assembled, so to speak, and Cody got his comeuppance. But instead, they turned that on its head, and they just wrestled a straight match for, you know, close to like 20-something minutes before things really broke down into chaos, and Jimmy Uso was the first out, and then so on and so forth. So I thought they subverted expectations in a really good way. I really, really enjoyed the wrestling portion of the match. And then, like, you know, as a wrestling fan, occasionally, and especially at WrestleMania, I think you have to sort of throw the book out the window on complaining about overbooking when it's something that has this much of an emotional impact and resonates so deeply with the live audience. I just thought that they did a tremendous job. And I honestly thought that this was less overbooked than I even anticipated. I mean, I thought that they might have thrown more stuff at the wall. I mean, if you're talking just on a personal level, I wish it were Steve Austin instead of The Undertaker. I thought that The Undertaker, you know, the crowd loved it, obviously, and you know, whatever. It's not going to knock the thing down a peg for me, but Austin would have made a lot more sense. I mean, he fits in better with that crew. He could have been out there to celebrate. They could have done the beer bash. You know, he and The Rock obviously have all this history. It just would have made a lot more sense. But maybe he wasn't available. I assume that he would have been the first choice. I can't imagine that he was just an oversight on their part. So it may not have been something that he was willing to do, and that's that. But I thought it was excellent, and I thought that the post-match celebration, I've seen some clamoring of complaint already about that, and I just can't entertain that notion, because like you alluded to earlier, this was a near 4-year reign for Roman Reigns. It was a historic championship run for this company that changed business for the better. It's unlikely that we will see anything like it in the next decade or more. And this was the first moment of coronation for your number one overall babyface. They should milk every single moment of that. And the crowd didn't want to leave, so why stop? Just enjoy it. Revel in it. Keep the cameras rolling. And the fact that they let baby faces come out there and celebrate, that never happens anymore. And it should, because why wouldn't Cody Rhodes' friends be happy for him and want to celebrate with him? I thought it was incredibly well done, incredibly emotional, and a top all-time WrestleMania moment.
Yeah, sometimes we're kind of prisoners of the moment, and we have that thing where we look at what's going on in front of us, and we overuse, you know, greatest of all time, and, you know, it's the old Michael Jordan, LeBron James debate, right? Like, mm-hmm. you know, people from a certain generation prefer Jordan, people from a certain generation prefer LeBron, and it's that instant gratification of, you know, what I'm seeing right now is the best ever. But I do think you're right. This is going to go up there, and this is going to be shown in WrestleMania video packages for the next 40 years, perhaps, you know, this moment. I think that's the level of a kind of moment that it was. And I don't think I'm just looking at it that through a lens of recency bias or anything like that. I do think it was a tremendous moment. So just to reset things, if you're just tuning in, this is Wrestling Night in America for April 7th, 2024. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks. You can follow me on Twitter/X at Greg M. Parks. I'm being joined by PWTorch.com contributor Brandon LeClaire, and we are breaking down WrestleMania Night 2 with you, the listeners. If you're listening live, you can call us up, 515-605-9345. Press 1 to give your thoughts to us on WrestleMania Night 2, and you can also email us your thoughts. If you can't stay up for the duration of the show with us, you can't stick on hold, that's fine. WNIALivecast@gmail.com is where you can send your emails. DJ from Miami is first up for us on the phones tonight. DJ, welcome back to Wrestling Night in America. What did you think of WrestleMania Night 2?
Pretty good. Not too bad. My third thing, I guess, we can go into what you guys were talking about, the last match. The ending was a little much, a little, you know, cheesy-ish, you know, with Undertaker. I think they could have did it a little better, you know, with maybe Seth Rollins, like, jumping off of the blah, 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 and then, you know, tackling The Rock and Sokoa, and then all of a sudden Roman does something, blah, 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 and then all of a sudden you just hear a gong and Roman turns around, boom, Cody, did a Cody cut, something. You know what I'm saying? Undertaker didn't need to come out there, but I don't know. I feel like at end of the day, it was great when Cody's family came out, blah, blah, blah. I don't know. I feel like this is a new era, how they keep on saying it. So I feel like the next person who definitely would like to see face Cody would be like maybe like a Logan Paul or a Braun Breaker or somebody upcoming, or do you still see the Bloodline going to do something until over SummerSlam, or do you see that the new era is going to be the new up-and-coming people? Because I mean, Logan Paul showed, you know, his stuff today, and I thought for sure he was going to lose to Randy, so maybe he could focus on Cody, but I guess they're going to keep him around for a while. So what do you guys think at the end of the day?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's never too soon to look ahead, Brandon, about what could be next for Cody Rhodes. You would anticipate that Roman Reigns takes some extended time off, perhaps. It's likely that we don't see him for a while he convalesces and licks his wounds after this epic loss. You know, with the caveat that there is a draft coming up. Triple H strongly hinted, if not outright confirmed, that they expect to have a draft in the next month or so that will shake things up again. Is there anyone top of mind for you? You know, you could continue the Bloodline versus Cody story by having Jimmy Uso or having Solo Sikoa face Cody at the next show, which I believe is Backlash. You could go in a completely different direction and have the Bloodline kind of you know, at risk of being torn apart by this loss, and have Cody go in a completely different direction against an AJ Styles or an LA Knight or someone else on the SmackDown brand, presuming that the belts are kept on separate brands with Damian Priest on Raw. So is there anyone that jumps out to you as, I mean, Randy Orton? Like, I mean, think of the history they have, and you could make the argument that, you know, Cody would like to give Randy Orton one last shot at the Universal Championship and do babyface versus babyface. So what do you think would be next for Cody?
Man, I it's funny. I mean, knowing that we assumed that Cody would win this match, so you'd think that I would maybe have been thinking about this, but I really haven't. Presumably, Cody's gonna reside primarily on SmackDown, though with the draft coming up in relatively short order, I would expect that they'll let guys continue to float the way that they have during WrestleMania season, probably until then. But it's going to be challenging because I think, you know, I like the Randy Orton idea, like you mentioned, but he seems like he's still going to be tied up with Logan Paul. KO took the pin tonight. It doesn't seem like Orton's issues with Paul are resolved, and I would think that they'll get a one-on-one match at some point. That seems like it could be in the cards. It's also a face-versus-face match, so unless you want to turn Randy heel, I don't know if you want to go to a face-face program right out of the gate. As far as credible heels, I mean, there isn't a lot. If you're looking on the SmackDown side, you could do a short-term program with AJ Styles, but that doesn't feel like it would have all that much juice right now. LA Knight, certainly a possibility, though he's also someone who I think you could move into the U.S. title picture with Logan Paul. He was, of course, rumored to be the one to face Paul at WrestleMania for quite some time, so that's a possibility as well. I would assume that there's going to be some call-ups coming out of WrestleMania, Bron Breakker being one, Carmelo Hayes being another. I mean, if they see a lot in Carmelo Hayes, it could be him. You could, in a way similar to what they did with AJ Styles coming out of WrestleMania in 2016, sending him right into a program with Roman Reigns. Carmelo won't win the title, but he could be put into a position with Cody, and that would be an interesting main event or you know, match on the card for something like Backlash or a secondary match on the King and Queen of the Ring tournament that's going to be coming up at the end of May. So a couple of options there, but I don't see any top level main event challengers just like waiting in the wings for him.
And as DJ said, you really don't know moving forward how much they're going to lean into that new era talk that they spent so much time discussing on air tonight. Like, are they just going to, is it really going to be a new era in that we're going to see challengers that we've not seen before at the main event level, which would rule out guys like AJ Styles and Randy Orton and guys like that? Are they going to make a conscious effort to push others into those roles? Or is that just kind of a little bit of lip service and marketing and trying to distance the company from Vince McMahon and the allegations that have come forward? So I do wonder what that would look like as well. You know, you mentioned Carmelo Hayes. I think that might be where he fits in if they really take that to the hilt. DJ, we'll go back to you for your second question for us tonight.
My second thing is going into the first match. Oh, it was kind of crazy. I think personally, now that they did the switcheroo-ski, I feel like, I don't know. I have this weird feeling that Gunther is going to go with that, and it's going to be Gunther and Priest at SummerSlam. I put my money on it, and I feel like Gunther is going to be the champion. So Cody will be the face over there, and Gunther will be the heel champion over there because, I don't know, I feel like Seth Rollins came out with the gear, so it's just like, is he going to turn heel, or is he going to just maybe do a tag team thing? I don't know what's going on with that. It was kind of strange on that part, but I feel like Gunther might be the next thing because of this. I don't know, because maybe Drew's hurt. I don't know. Or they're just going to wait to, you know, skin him.
Gunther's an interesting name, Brandon, and I think Seth Rollins, you know, Rollins is another candidate who could take some time off to heal up some injuries. You know, you could say that really Cody owes Seth Rollins a title shot. So I think that could be a story as well. You know, DJ mentions Gunther versus Damian Priest if Priest holds the title that long. You also have the option of Gunther versus Cody Rhodes, which I think is tremendously more compelling. But if you do want to get a major title on Gunther, I think doing it through Damian Priest and the world title is a lot easier than doing it through Cody Rhodes and the Universal title. So, Gunther, what's next for him? He loses the IC title to Sami Zayn this weekend. Do you see it more likely that he faces Priest or whomever is the champion? I mean, you know, Priest could lose it tomorrow for all we know. But do you see him more likely challenging whoever is that champion, or do you see him more likely challenging Cody Rhodes?
It's funny, we were talking last night about Gunther and his loss to Sami Zayn, and I mentioned that I thought that if they were going to move the championship off of Gunther, it was likely because they were priming him for a main event spot, a main event position. And now coming out of night two, he kind of feels, in a way, like the odd man out, because you have a babyface champion who you're going to likely want to keep the championship on for a while, and I don't think you want to beat Gunther again that quickly. And on the other side, you have a heel champion in Damian Priest with a heel challenger in Drew McIntyre looking like he'd be waiting in the wings. So I think a lot of this comes down to how quickly CM Punk is going to be available, and whether or not they feel it necessary to have the title involved with the McIntyre and CM Punk program. I could see Gunther being the guy to take the title from Priest, but I could also see them going right back to McIntyre. And then as far as Seth goes, I left tonight wondering if Seth is not hurt, because he absolutely could have been selling, but he was in the background for the majority of Cody's celebration. He was slumped against the ropes, having multiple conversations off camera with Kevin Owens. And it didn't seem like they were just, you know, chumming it up and being jovial. Like, it seemed like Seth might have been explaining something to Kevin. And then Kevin left the ring first to help Seth out of the ring and walked him to the back with a referee. And then that could also then bring some sort of clarity to the kind of match that Seth and Drew had earlier in the night as well. So I'm wondering if there is an injury there. And even if there isn't, it wouldn't surprise me to see Seth take some time, because he is just, I mean, he's a marathon man. And, man, if anybody deserves it right now, it is him.
And, DJ, back to you for your third and final question for us.
My last thing is, that's a two-part thing. My last thing is, they did a lot of cussing again, I noticed, and they were saying, you know, new era, and they, pro wrestling is back, but the thing is, and it's kind of funny, is that pro wrestling has gone away. Netflix is coming, and like I said before, like, not everybody in the world can afford Netflix, or not everybody in the world knows about Netflix, or blah, 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 blah. They know about pay-per-view and internet more than, you know, anything at all, or paying for, you know, seeing it online, you know, and on YouTube or something. But I feel like if they're going to do now, they're doing shots fired. So I don't know if EAW is going to step up their game or what, because, you know, it looks like, you know, they're doing the right direction with Mark Briscoe, you know, winning a title. So I don't know if they're heading in the right direction, but I don't know if the war's going to be over after, you know, the stupid Netflix thing.
What war? WWE and AEW?
Yeah, pro wrestling's back, so let's do this, you know what I'm saying? So they keep on saying, this is it, you know, rubbing it in their faces. I noticed, like, hey, you know, Cody's our champion, so let's do something, you know.
I don't think they had AEW in mind when they were talking about pro wrestling being back or Cody Rhodes winning the championship. I think I don't think WWE thinks about AEW nearly as much as people want to believe, but that's just my impression. Did you have a second part there for us, DJ?
Yeah, I was just thinking that, you know, Netflix is coming, so do you think that at the end of the day that so many eyes are on this, they can lose viewership because of Netflix or do you think that pro wrestling is definitely back and it's going to get higher because of Netflix?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm not sure that we'll ever know the real answer as long as Nielsen doesn't record Netflix live viewership. So I'm not sure. It's not certainly not going to be an apples-to-apples comparison in terms of what they draw on Netflix versus what they draw on, say, the USA Network or even Fox. It's just not going to be the same. I don't think we can look at the ratings the same way. But the one thing you have to understand is WWE, the most valuable viewer to WWE and any television program is that 18 to 49 demographic. And that is the demographic most likely to have Netflix. And so that is, you know, they're potentially losing viewers, but they're losing the older viewers that television and advertisers see as not as important. So I think that's, Brandon, one aspect of the WWE move to Netflix that it's important to understand that they're doing this. You know, it's similar to the creation of the WWE Network, right? WWE was sort of ahead of the game by having their own streaming service. And, you know, streaming service was in a boom a couple of years ago. So they were ahead of that game a little bit. And, you know, being one of the first, if not the first live streaming Netflix shows, you know, getting ahead of the game in that way too, and jumping, they still got their foot in the cable/network TV waters, you know, with NXT and with SmackDown. But I guess the nice thing from WWE's perspective of having all these television properties is they can move one over here and just try this out and see if they can be ahead of the game again in a positive way. And if not, they've got these other properties over here on network and on cable so that they can draw viewers as well. So it is, Brandon, a complicated discussion, WWE to Netflix, but I think, you know, those are really the high points of why WWE is going there. You know, that's the way that television is going to streaming, and it's to capture the younger viewer.
Yeah, I would definitely push back against the notion or the narrative that they're going to be losing potential eyeballs on the product, because Netflix is in far more homes than USA. I mean, by a drastic number. It's not even comparable. So the number of people who will have access to WWE programming is going to multiply exponentially when they move to Netflix. Now, is there a chance that they lose some of the older demographic? Absolutely. But like you said, Greg, they're not looking for them anymore. I mean, they are catering specifically to the 18 to 49 demo, and those people are the most likely to already have Netflix and other streaming service accounts. WWE has been ahead of the curve all the way when it comes to streaming services. This dates all the way back to Vince McMahon with the inception of the WWE Network in 2014, which many people considered ahead of its time, and I think that the price that they receive from Peacock for it would certainly bore that out. So they're doing this because it maximizes the availability of their product to the demographic that they want to cater to. I think that if this goes well, it's pretty likely you'll see a continuation of products being moved, WWE products being moved to streaming services. And really, I mean, this is sort of the lay of the land now. They are the first to do it officially, to transition a program fully to streaming. But as you saw with the network, it proved to be a successful venture that a lot of other companies and sports companies really followed suit with. So I expect this is just the lay of the land now, and I think it's going to be a net positive for the company overall. And like you said, they're still diversified. I mean, they are now going to have a major weekly episodic television show on one of, if not the biggest streaming platform in the world, a 2-hour weekly episodic television series on a broadcast over the air network in the CW with NXT, and still have their stranglehold over on USA with NBC Universal. So they are in a great position.
All right, DJ, thank you for the call this week. All right, let's go to the next caller. We've got the 443 area code, 443. Welcome to Wrestling Night in America. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hello, Fernando calling. I live in Maryland, but I'm calling from WrestleMania in the parking lot.
Oh, wonderful. Love to have an on-site correspondent. Fernando, thank you so much for calling. Now, before we get into peppering you with all kinds of questions, were you at both nights or just night two?
Jeremy, stop. I'm on the
phone. Oh, I didn't know.
You did know.
I didn't know.
You did know. Sorry, I'm in the car with my friend Jeremy, and he's being obnoxious. Sorry.
First time listener?
We were in both nights, yes.
Okay, cool.
Hello?
Yes.
Don't do that.
What was your impression of the crowd both nights? Because night two's crowd seemed a lot more into the show, a lot more vocal than night one. Is that kind of your perspective from being there live?
No. I felt like both nights, I mean, in my section, it was pretty active. I sat pretty close, like kind of in the riser section, so everyone was pretty active and engaged. I think just naturally, I feel like night two, people were more engaged because they were ready for the, you know, the Cody to finish the story, but I thought it was pretty engaging both nights.
Well, let's start there. Cody Rhodes versus Roman Reigns. That was a long match. It was a long segment. You know, it went almost an hour from the time the match started to the time the show went off the air. Did people seem into it from beginning to end? Did they ever lose the crowd at any point during the match? And, you know, was the crowd as solidly behind Cody? Were there any pockets of Roman Reigns cheers that you heard, anything like that?
Yes, the crowd in my section seemed pretty solidly behind Cody, but I felt like the people in my section kind of looked at the clock and were like, oh, we're going to be here a while, and they thought the match was going to be as long as night one, the main event was, so people kind of like sat down, but you could still see people chanting like Cody, Cody, Cody in our section. There were some pockets of Roman Reigns fans when people would say like, you know, a big Roman chant, people would kind of like not drown them out, but they would just make like off-color references like, you know, about Roman, like, you know, like, now it's a tribal chief, like, and they would say, oh, now the his story's over, you know, like, stuff like that, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The consensus seems to be that from a... Okay, yeah, I was going to ask you about what you thought. The consensus seems to be that Night 2 was a better show than Night 1. Is that how you saw it, too, or did you see it a little differently?
You know, so I felt like Night 1 and Night 2 were kind of different shows. Like, I felt like Night One kind of felt more so like a classic WrestleMania show where they were just trying to get a lot of people on the card. It was kind of a lot of matches that you kind of had an idea of where they would go. And it just felt like a much more old school night. Whereas Night Two, I felt like it really just felt to me like everyone was kind of anticipating just that main event. Everyone was kind of just waiting and anxiously kind of trying to figure out, like, whether he's going to finish the story or not. I think that a lot of people were into the triple threat match. I felt like the street fight and Bailey's match were when I saw a lot of people taking bathroom breaks. I feel like night one was better, but this probably was the most balanced of the night ones and night twos, in my opinion. I didn't feel like it was like a runaway. Night two was better, but I do feel like it was a better, for the most part.
Did the weather have any effect on the crowd at all? I know night two, I think, was a little warmer, but it dipped into the 40s on night one. Did that affect the crowd at all in any way?
I can speak for myself. It affected me. It was very cold yesterday. Like, it was cold, blustery, windy. And so I remember, like, when we kind of got to the stadium on night two, we were like, oh, wow, like, the sun's still out, it's not as cold. And it never got as cold as night one. I think that that was probably the coldest WrestleMania that I've been to. And I've been to one in New York, and I've been to a couple of them. But it was pretty cold yesterday.
Brandon, any questions for Fernando here?
Yeah, I was really curious. Earlier on in the show tonight, first couple of matches, second couple of matches, sorry, the street fight, and then the LA Knight AJ Styles match. It sounded like the crowd wasn't fully invested because there was something going on, whether it was the screens or lights or something like that. There were some weird chants in both matches, and it was kind of hard to make out on TV. Did you notice or see anything from the crowd?
Yes. Yes. So let me start by saying that both nights, it seemed like the WWE was kind of inconsistent with what they were doing with the screen. So some parts of the match, they would show the match on the screen. Sometimes they weren't. And we couldn't, and I don't think the fans could tell whether it was on purpose or not. Like, sometimes when you go to some of the live shows, they just don't show anything on the screen. You kind of get used to it. But here they were showing some parts of the match on screen, and sometimes they weren't. And so I know in our section, for example, there were people chanting, like, you know, turn on the screen, turn on the screen. And apparently there was a lighting issue kind of in the upper decks. And so, like, what you probably were hearing when people saying, we can't see, or turn off the lights. Turn off lights because there were people, I guess, in the upper decks with the lights that were, like, directly on them, and I guess they were having a hard time seeing what was going on because they couldn't see. So that was a funny chant. During the Logan match, they were chanting a bunch of different drinks like Gatorade and H2O and stuff like that. But, like, I felt bad for the AJ Styles LA Knight match because I felt like that's when it was the most pronounced. And so it was like you could tell they were really into the – like people wanted to get into the match, but there were some people literally just like, we can't see it because the lights were blinding their section. So, yeah.
Hmm. The makeup of the crowd, I mean, was it just WWE diehards who traveled from all over? What was the – were there a lot of families, little kids there? I mean, you know, I've been to house shows and I've been to TV tapings, and the crowds in those two are very vastly different. You know, house shows, much more family atmosphere, many kids. TV tapings, it's more adults, more younger adults. You know, what was your take on the makeup of the crowd from a demographic standpoint?
I think as far as the crowd, I think that it definitely felt like an international crowd. I heard a lot of different accents and languages as I was just walking through the Midway. I would say in my sections, I saw a lot of diehard fans, but I also could see some people, like, you know, like, for example, it was a husband and wife couple sitting next to me that just got married. And so I could tell the wife was kind of into it, but I think she was kind of into it because her husband was into it. At least in my row, you saw a lot of, like, couples. So you would see, like, you can kind of tell, like, this is, like, the diehard fan, and this is, like, the, you know, I'm bringing my girlfriend, I'm bringing my friends who maybe don't know what's going on. I did see some kids, but not a lot of kids in my section. For the most part, I saw just adults, and it seemed like there was a lot more diehard fans that kind of knew what was going on, but you could kind of tell the fans that were kind of brought along, cause they were like, oh, it's WrestleMania, and, you know, I've heard about it. Let me see what it's all about.
What was Lincoln Financial Field like? I mean, were they accommodating to the size of the crowd that was there? Was there any difficulty in terms of parking or traffic or concessions or anything like that? Or did you feel like they handled it pretty well?
I will say it's ironic because I've been on the phone in this parking lot waiting to get out since we got to the car, and I immediately called the phone number. Like, oh, let's just listen to the show. We'll wait, and I'm still here. Concessions were normally pretty long. Lines for merchandise were pretty long. I didn't see a lot of short lines anywhere. And I will also note that I actually got a little frustrated on night one because, like, you know, when you typically go to, like, concerts or sporting events, you would see, like, the event staff kind of, like, facing the crowd, kind of watching the crowd and seeing what's going on. That was not the case at this stadium. Like, the event staff was just as into the show as we were. Like, they were taking pictures, they were standing around, they were watching the matches. It was like if something was going on in the crowd, they would not know. And ironically, I was in a section where Rock and Seth Rollins were fighting, and that was the only time they actually looked like a professional setup. At that point, they all kind of, like, looked, you know, they kind of stood there, they were looking away with their hands, like, you know how they look when they were security. But the moment they got back in the ring and they knew that segment was over, they went right back to just being fans. And some fans were kind of pissed because they were, like, standing up in front of people, like, you didn't pay for this. And, like, eventually bought chairs.
Oh, yeah.
They were, like, blocking people's view. So it was an experience that I'm not used to. And I've never seen that at any other WWE shows or any other shows that I've been to. So that was kind of weird. But the stadium's nice. It looked like a pretty good venue. I was people a little frustrated or curious about the lack of pyro tonight, like, especially because in one of the segments, they talked about, like, oh, you know, WrestleMania is fireworks, is all these things, and I'm like, that was not this WrestleMania. There was not a lot of pyro used. There was not, like, the perimeter fireworks or, like, you know, they did enough to kind of put it in the video package, but it was not, like, the typical pomp and circumstance that I'm used to seeing when I go to, like, WrestleMania.
Yeah, that's a good point, too. The security standing up and watching, I don't think I've ever seen that either show. I don't know. I'm sure they may get a talking to from their higher-ups at some point, maybe, if that gets out. Brandon, anything else that you want to ask Fernando here?
Yeah, curious to know if you attended any of the, like, peripheral events hosted by WWE, stuff like the WWE World throughout the week.
No, you know, we didn't. We kind of, only thing we did was we went to the Busted Open Radio show, and then we kind of went to the Superstore. But other than that, we didn't really attend any other events. We kind of did a mix of, like, you know, touristy Philadelphia stuff and eating at different places and kind of just saving our energy for the show. So,
One last thing about the show itself. One of the big moments tonight, I felt, even though I didn't necessarily like, you know, who was doing the cash-in, but the Damian Priest cash-in, the execution of that was something I thought was really cool and fun and a huge moment for the crowd. Did you feel like they were just really excited to be seeing a cash-in, or were they actually invested in Damian Priest?
Probably the former, to be honest. I think, at least in my section, a lot of people were like, oh, my God, we got to see a cash-in. I didn't see a lot of people like, oh, yeah, we're so excited about the future of, you know, Damian Priest. I think a lot of people were like, oh, it's about time, and oh, yeah, like, Damian Priest is finally, you know, doing his job and cashing in when he's supposed to. I think that, you know, a lot of people seem to be more excited about the actual fact that he was cashing, that there was a cash-in and they were present for it. Just speaking for myself, I feel like when I think about what happened at this Mania and I look at the people who kind of are over going forward, I look at, like, Damian Priest, I look at Rhea Ripley, I look at Bayley, and I see a lot of Triple H projects that I feel like Triple H was really invested in. And so I'm like, huh, like, I'm really – so from that perspective, I'm kind of in a space for me personally where I'm like, I'm willing to give Triple H a shot because he's done such a good job and he's built up that cachet of capital with me. I don't know what he's going to do with Damian Priest. He's not my favorite wrestler, but I'm curious. I trust what Triple H has done so far that he's going to tell a interesting story on what that looks like with, you know, that faction and how there's going to be tension with him and Finn or what that looks like for the Judgment Day going forward. I think that he's earned my trust in telling that story and seeing what it looks like. Even though, to me, Damian Priest is like a project, in my opinion. He's not a main eventer to me.
Is there anything else that we didn't ask you about that you think is worthy of sharing that you noticed, or anything that happened off air that you took note of?
No, I think we covered everything. I mean, to be honest, I kind of was going to listen to the show, so I didn't know I was even in the queue, so I didn't really have any thoughts. People were just, like, listening and, having our own little banter in the car. So thanks for taking my call, though.
Oh, sweet. Yes, absolutely. I appreciate you calling in, even if you didn't mean to share all this with us. We always love having live perspective. So if any of you out there go to a live TLE or pay-per-view or what have you, we always appreciate that live perspective that Fernando supplied here for nights one and two. So thank you, Fernando, and thanks to everybody who does give us that opportunity to get that live perspective here on these post shows. I've got a couple emails, Brandon, we'll get to. Kevin in Colorado, he says, what was the finish of that match? It was so convoluted, and it undercut Cody so much. I'm very sour on that finish. Cody needed to win strong. I would have rather Roman win instead of that finish. I disagree. I think if it was, you know, a slip on a banana peel finish or something like that, but yes, Roman was distracted by Seth and that allowed Cody to recover. But I mean, Cody did hit him with three crossroads and get the pin. So you know, a roll-up, you know, or anything like that. It was not I thought it was as strong as it needed to be. Was it the strongest he could have won by? No, of course not. But in a match that you know going in is going to have so much interference and so much hullabaloo on the outside, I don't think I ever expected Cody to win stronger than he won tonight. I think that was as strong as I could kind of see him winning. And really, like, when you have that level of celebration afterward, I think it does kind of mask whatever complaints about the finish you might have, because people aren't watching that celebration. And when that celebration's over, they're like, boy, they really wasted that celebration because Cody didn't win strong enough. Like, I don't think anyone's sitting there thinking that, you know? No one's going to think that when Cody comes out tomorrow and gives his mission statement interview or what have you. So, you know, knowing what this match was going to be going in, I didn't have a problem with the way he won it. Do you think Cody should have won it in a stronger fashion than that?
No, I think that this was what it needed to be. I think that they primed us for a match exactly of these stakes and of this caliber. I mean, the Bloodline has spent the entirety of Roman Reigns' run as champion helping him win under various forms and fashions, and they did it last year. So Cody went into WrestleMania last year, and he did it alone. He went it alone, and he couldn't get it done because the odds against the Bloodline are just insurmountable. And going into this year, Cody spent the entire year, the entire calendar year, building relationships with other babyfaces to put him in an advantageous position so that if he got the opportunity to face Roman Reigns,
yeah,
he would at least have some people watching his back. And Reigns' team got stronger by adding The Rock, and Cody's team got stronger by adding the legends that he added. And, you know, he picked up John Cena, for example, and did so because Cena had his own confrontation with the Bloodline. I mean, like I mentioned earlier, The Undertaker is the only one that doesn't straight up make sense when you consider it, but then you can point to his history with both The Rock and Roman Reigns, if you want to.
Mm-hmm.
So no, I thought that this was what it needed to be. It was what I think a lot of people advertised it or thought that WWE was doing. This was the Avengers. This was WWE's Avengers coming to roost and rallying around their babyface champion to finally take down the bad guys. I said on Twitter last night, and others have said it as well, the ending of last night's WrestleMania was Infinity War, and tonight was Endgame.
Yeah. I will nod my head and pretend to know what you're talking about. I've heard other people make that comparison too. That's a foreign concept to me, but if that's how they can make it relatable, I think that's a really cool way to do it. I think that's a pretty successful story to follow. So if you're going to follow a story from pop culture, that's probably the one to do. Another email we've got from Feeney. He says, excellent night 2, 3.5 stars. I'm not sure how many that's out of, so I don't really know how good that score is. 4 or 5, I mean, whatever. She said, not next for Cody, but one day, Gunther, your thoughts. You know, kind of gave our thoughts on Gunther. He does, the more you think about the potential wrestlers that Cody could face, the more Gunther does stand out. You know, you wonder if it's a coincidence that on the same weekend, Cody Rhodes wins the Universal title, Gunther just happens to lose the IC title. And that frees Gunther up to face a babyface champion in Cody Rhodes. Or even Damian Priest. I know that was a discussion point as well. So anything else you want to add to that idea of Gunther versus Cody Rhodes at some point? Maybe not next, as the emailer notes, but at some point.
At some point, I think it's definitely a money match. I would not vote for it being up next, just because I think it it puts you in a disadvantageous position where you have two guys who really need to win. So I wouldn't do it next, but I would absolutely do it down the road.
Mm-hmm. All right, the 716 area code is up next. It is David from Pennsylvania. David, welcome to Wrestling Night in America tonight. What do you have for us related to WrestleMania Night 2?
Hey, Greg, I appreciate you taking my call, man. From one upstate in New York native to another, appreciate you getting me on tonight. And, you know, a couple things, man, about this tonight. I didn't watch the pay-per-view, but I watched all the stuff online with it. A couple things that were really good to me. I thought Priest cashing in and winning was great. I thought the way he did, because McIntyre, you know, the whole way into WrestleMania was like, you know, acting like, you know, he was going to win, and he was holier than thou, and then it was funny to see him kind of lose the way he did, which was a perfect fit into the storyline there with him and Punk, and their match doesn't need to be for the title down the road, which will be great. And then the main event, obviously, I just thought all the legends coming back, taking out, you know, the bloodline, I think was great, you know, because like all these years that Reigns was the champion, Reigns cheated to win all these times, and tonight Reigns got his. And now it's going to be really interesting where this goes tomorrow night, because, like, you can totally see, like, the night, like, we've seen this the night after WrestleMania where, like, X-Pac joined D-Generation X, The Rock kicked Farouk out of the Nation, Enzo and Cass debuted on Raw. All these wild things happened the night after WrestleMania. So I have a feeling something tomorrow night big happens with The Rock and Roman. And I think it's going to be like one of those holy shit moments like we'll never forget, we'll be talking about for a long time, because it's going to really change the way the people – I think now the way to portray Roman Reigns is like you got to sell his – like he's going to come back from this kind of like – and to compare it to real life, like his battle with leukemia. And obviously it's not the same thing because it's not, but now you've got to portray him as that comeback figure. – And The Rock is really going to take evil to another level with this final boss character.
Yeah, I mean, a lot to unpack there. The Rock and let me start with the night after WrestleMania, because David brought up a lot of historical aspects of the night after WrestleMania. It has become a major show unto itself, Brandon, over time. Last couple of years has not been the same. I would say since the pandemic, it really hasn't been what we traditionally think of when we think of a night after WrestleMania episode of Raw. Do you expect it to go back to what it had been before, or do you expect WWE to treat tomorrow night as maybe just another episode of Raw, more so than a really special episode that it had been before?
Well, we'd heard the rumblings of some call-ups post-WrestleMania, so it wouldn't surprise me if we get a few of those. To me, the appeal of the post-Raw WrestleMania always kind of felt like, during the Vince McMahon era, WrestleMania, the belief among, I think, the hardcore fans was that WrestleMania was for the casuals, it was for the celebrities, it was for the people who tune in once a year and then never watch again until next WrestleMania. And the Monday after WrestleMania, that Raw was for the diehards. That was when you found out who the next program was going to be, and it was oftentimes somebody who you thought might have been overlooked. Perfect example is something I brought up earlier, where the night after WrestleMania 32, we find out that AJ Styles is going to be Roman Reigns' first challenger for his newly won championship. Stuff like that. I think that with Vince McMahon leaving the company, with Triple H taking over, with creative at what many consider would be an all-time high, and at the very least, you know, very, very good, WrestleManias have in turn gotten, in large part, very good for both casual and hardcore fans alike. I think that they found a sweet spot where they are appealing to the masses, finally, and not just catering to one segment. And so with that in mind, the whole premise of the massive show right after WrestleMania feels a little passé, in that they're already kind of doing that on the big show themselves. They don't need that after Raw WrestleMania to send a message to the hardcores to say, like, hey, we're still here for you, because they're already doing that with the big events. So I don't think that we're going to see it return to form, so to speak, to being what maybe it once was. But I also think that it's likely to be a far cry from what we saw last year, for example, which felt like after a really good WrestleMania, they just spoiled a lot of the goodwill that they built up because it was evident that Vince McMahon's paws were all over that show. And so we're not going to have that hanging over our heads this year. So I would expect something more in between.
The Rock-Roman relationship, there wasn't anything overt in this match, even hinted at like there was in night one, any kind of dissension or disagreement or anything like that. I will say, after the match, when they very briefly showed Roman and Rock outside the ring, Roman was bent over in pain. Rock aggressively grabbing his weight belt from the referee. And I thought then and there, The Rock was going to start whipping Roman with that belt. But they cut away and never to be heard from again. So, you know, that was in the back of my mind when, you know, you're expecting this relationship to blow up at some point. So the next beat of The Rock-Roman relationship, you know, we kind of talked about Roman potentially taking some time off. Rock is going to be away filming movies. I mean, that's going to be his main job. He's going to come back when he can, but, you know, it's not going to be the priority, I don't think. So when do we see the next shoe drop in that relationship, whatever it may be? And it may not even be Rock and Roman at loggerheads. It might be them just, you know, still together, but when do you anticipate that might happen?
I'm not sure. I mean, I think there is a possibility that we see it tomorrow. It's possible that The Rock just rides off into the sunset until the next time we see him, and tonight was it. But it's also possible that tomorrow is more of the stamp on this presentation for a while. I mean, I think that is a strong possibility, but I wouldn't. I would really and truly, I'm not trying to hedge, but I'd say it's 50-50 whether we see The Rock get involved in some sort of angle tomorrow to set up a program for 6 months to 12 months down the line, or we just don't see him at all and we don't see him for quite a long time. I think it's equally likely that either of those circumstances. I would think that, again, going back to the discussion we had last night, Greg, I think it really comes down to what does The Rock have left and when is he available? You know, are they going to get one more match out of him or are they going to get two? If it's two, then I think you move to the Cody Rhodes program next. If it's one, then it's got to be Roman Reigns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's going to be interesting. I think they've really made a case for Cody versus Rock as much as people were anticipating Rock-Roman being the real money match here. I wonder if the way this storyline has played out leading up to tonight has transitioned that from being Roman-Rock, the one that everybody wants to see, to now Rock-Cody being the one that everybody wants to see, whether intentionally or not. I wonder if that's kind of what happened.
To that point, too, and I'm glad you brought that up, I think that it was curious that tonight The Rock and Cody never touched. It seemed like they were headed for another collision course based on what happened last night and how personal this feud had become. I thought we were going to get a Rock and Cody moment, whether it were Rock continuing and getting another beatdown in, or it was Cody finally getting comeuppance on Rock, and they didn't do that, which tells me that they want to save that comeuppance for later.
Yeah, I do think that is a notable moment or non-moment in this show. David, back to you. Anything else for us tonight?
Yeah, I mean, I just think it was a really well done, WrestleMania. I think, you know, the thing with Triple H running the company, I loved how they're using the term professional wrestling again. I heard that several times this weekend from the Hall of Fame. To I think it was a Corey Graves maybe at the end of the show. I heard him mention that. So I think that's a good thing. And I think just overall the fact that Rhodes went away and, you know, he did all this stuff with AEW and he was not super popular with fans in AEW. Like he was sort of a tweener. Like some fans liked him, some fans didn't. And then he comes back here and he's like, he's the top guy. I mean, so like to me, it was incredible how like he kind of, he was decent in his first run with WWE. He was okay. I mean, he probably was almost a little disappointed with AEW because I think people expected more. And now he's come back and he's made it to the big time. So I think it's a really cool story. You know, it's hard to compare it to anything like maybe in sports, I guess. Like, you know, it's a guy that took a little long. I mean, I guess the analogy I would use is maybe like Phil Mickelson didn't win a major in golf till he was in his like early to mid-30s. But, you know, it's kind of it's tough to, you know, compare it because, you know, obviously pro wrestling is scripted. But this was an awesome feeling because it felt very real at the end there with all the wrestlers in there with him and Triple H and his wife and all that stuff. So, and how he hugged Michael Cole and all that. So I think it really, it hit home to a lot of people because it was real. And I think now, like, there's a lot of feuds that they can get out of it. I'd love to see him and McIntyre feud down the road. So I think it's going to be good to see where it goes. And I do think somebody like me who hasn't watched a ton over the last several years is at least somewhat interested now. But, yeah, we'll see where it goes, man. I think it's fun. And, you know, having guys like yourself and, you know, other guys in the industry, you guys cover it so well. It's like I said last week, it's like, you know, after an NFL game talking to Adam Schefter or an NBA game talking to Woj, you know, on ESPN. So it's pretty cool, man. But thanks again, guys, and you guys have a good week and enjoy the Masters, too. This will be this is a great time of year to be a sports fan and to be a wrestling fan.
Absolutely, David. Thank you so much for calling in. Thank you for the kind words. Brandon, let's go back to the emails here, and then we'll kind of wrap things up going through some of the matches that we haven't talked about. This is from John. He says, hi, Greg and Brandon. Hope you're both doing well. Said, what a fantastic night two of WrestleMania. Every match delivered, and the pace and energy was incredible. Bayley Io was my match of the night, in my opinion. But I thought the Cody Roman was a fantastic, hard-hitting, and emotional roller coaster and a fitting end to WrestleMania. Bayley Io had an incredible story, and every spot and moment mattered, and the selling from Bayley was fantastically well done. Don't take this as hyperbolic, but I legitimately feel it was one of the best WrestleMania matches ever. Question, how do you rank Bayley Io versus other big matches in WrestleMania history, especially other women's matches? I mean, I certainly liked Bayley and Io, but, you know, I don't think it was Charlotte Rhea. I don't think it was Bianca and who was it? Was it Bianca and Charlotte or Bianca and Becky a couple years ago? Sasha, okay. So I knew there was a big Bianca match. I just couldn't remember which one it was with, but, some really strong women's matches in the last 5 years. And so I liked Bayley and Io for sure. I thought Io's counter of Bayley's finisher and the reaction from the crowd that, whoa, collectively to see how she countered that was really cool. What did you think of the match? And to John's question, I mean, are you as high on it as John is in terms of the pantheon of women's wrestling matches from WrestleMania's past?
I'm not as high on it, but that's okay. I mean, wrestling is subjective, and everybody gets different enjoyment out of different styles of matches. But with that being said, I thought it was very good. I enjoyed it quite a bit, and I thought – you know, in terms of just straight up wrestling, I thought it was the best match of the night. I mean, I think there were other matches that I enjoyed more, the main event being one, just because of, you know, the epicness of the whole thing and the story that they were telling, because storytelling to me is so crucial to having matches that I look at so fondly down the road. And so there were other moments and matches on this show that I thought usurped it, but I thought it was the best pure wrestling match of the night. And it was a really strong match, I thought, from start to finish, especially the story that they were telling with Bayley's knee and the way that Io worked on it throughout and kind of saw that in the early going when Bayley planted wrong coming out of the ring after a dive and really, really took to that leg throughout the course of the match. There were a couple spots that I thought were really neat with the Germans, or the standing switches that they kept countering each other on until finally Bayley landed the German against the turnbuckle. I thought that was a really cool moment. And then the counter, like you mentioned, with the rose plant attempt there late in the match was really awesome. And it was a good moment for Bayley, a moment that the crowd was really, really excited for. I said in my report for PW Torch that it was cathartic to hear a crowd cheer for Bayley again and have permission to do so. I think, like, it's been a long time coming. And that's not to say that Bayley wasn't really great in her heel role. And she, along with Sasha Banks, were carrying those early pandemic shows that were, you know, held in silence in the Performance Center. But it was time. I mean, Bayley is a natural babyface, and I think it was time to transition her back to that role and see if she can sink or swim with this, you know, newer, more serious character. I was a little upset that they, you know, they finally gave her a new theme, and it seems to be as generic as the last one, but that is par for the course with WWE's music production these days, unfortunate as it is. As far as comparisons to previous, you know, women's matches on WrestleMania, I don't know where I'd have it overall, but I know, just thinking off the top of my head, I certainly have the aforementioned Rhea and Charlotte match from last year ahead of it, as well as Bianca Belair and Sasha Banks from a couple of years ago that main evented night one. And then I would probably place the triple threat match from 32 ahead of it as well, for sure. And there might be some others, but those are just the ones off the top of my head.
So back to John's email, he says, I thought Cody Roman was on the verge of being overbooked, but I have high praise for their choices in that match, Solo coming out as well as Jimmy, and also Seth, and of course Cena made sense. Undertaker was weird, but putting him in place of Austin made it more of a surprise. This was one of the best endings to a WrestleMania ever. I get the people who think Cody maybe looked weak and needing all that help, but as I said, most of the people who got involved made sense, and Cody still kicked out of multiple big moves and looked gutsy, and Cena and Undertaker only helped him even the odds. I feel like Night 2 surpassed Night 1 by some distance, though Night 1 was still very good. Personally, I give it an A+. Question 2, what letter grade would you give Night 2? I don't want to give too much away because I do have my 1 to 10 score in the Torch newsletter coming up this week, so no spoilers from me, but I don't think that is an inappropriate grade. Let me just say that for Night 2. I think A+ is completely warranted. What would you grade Night 2, Brandon?
I will give it a solid A. And combined with my score from last night of a B+, I will give the overall weekend an A-. How's that?
Okay. Well done. Yeah, that makes sense. It was also cool to see Stephanie open the show and welcome the fans to a new era. The second night felt like a heartwarming, feel-good sort of night, with wrestlers finishing their stories, winning championships, and sharing wonderfully emotional moments with fans. It started with Stephanie's appearance. Question 3, do you think with the emphasis on the new Triple H era and the quality of both nights of this year's WrestleMania, do you think this will likely be one of the most remembered WrestleManias ever alongside WrestleMania 3 and 17? All these WrestleManias run together for me these days. There was a time when there were maybe only like a dozen or 20 or something. Like, every WrestleMania kind of had its own personality, I feel like. But there's just so many of them now, it's harder for them to stand out amongst the crowd. That being said, you know, this is the first WrestleMania without Vince McMahon being in charge. And I think there's something to be said for perhaps this WrestleMania breaking that mold and being one that is remembered above a lot of the others and will perhaps stand out amongst the others. Do you think that's possible?
Yeah, I think it definitely is likely to be one that people look back on fondly, probably perhaps even more so in hindsight, just given, depending on where things go. I mean, I hope that Cody has a really strong run and that we see continued growth for the business overall. But I think you're going to be looking back at a show that happened during a really hot time period where WWE successfully told a story over the course of more than a year without having fans revolt in any way against it, which is a pretty significant accomplishment in and of itself. And I think that people will remember this really fondly. It actually I saw someone, I don't want to take credit for it, I don't know exactly who it was, but I did see someone on Twitter remark that every 10 years or so, dating all the way back to WrestleMania 10, there's a big coronating moment for an underdog babyface, and that trend continued. You had Bret Hart at WrestleMania 10, then Chris Benoit, Eddie Guerrero at WrestleMania 20. You have Daniel Bryan at WrestleMania 30, and now finally Cody Rhodes tonight. So, and those are all WrestleManias that people talk about and remember very fondly, along with the usuals, the 17s, the 19s for just the overall pure in-ring quality. People talk about last year's a lot as being, an event that, aside from Cody's demise in the main event, was a show that was really predicated on fan service and did really well. And I think that now having the story completed in hindsight, 39 will be remembered even more positively, knowing what was to come a year later too.
The next point John makes, I also think the crowd seemed much louder and more energetic on night two than night one. They seem to be into everything. What do you think about the crowd on night two versus night one? I think we did kind of talk about that. Certainly Fernando disagrees, and he was there live, so he would know better than anyone else. So maybe the crowd was mic'd differently. I mean, is that possible? I don't know.
The only other thing that comes to mind to me is maybe the wind. Maybe the wind was carrying the sound in a different direction, away from the mic.
Yeah. Yeah, when you're in a stadium like this, there's all kinds of stuff that can happen that can affect how the crowd comes across on TV. A lot of stuff that you can't control as a company in a way that you could inside an arena. Next question, how do you rank Paul Orton Owens with other triple threat matches throughout history? Again, I'm bad with ranking matches throughout history. I thought it was a good match. This was not a match that I particularly was looking forward to, not that I didn't like Logan Paul and Kevin Owens and Randy Orton, but just I thought of the matches for WrestleMania, I thought this one had kind of the flimsier story to it. That being said, I thought it was a really good triple threat. They did a nice job with Owens and Orton kind of getting along, and it was kind of a weird dynamic early because you got two baby faces double teaming the heel, and then, you know, when they both went for the pin and they kind of looked at each other and the crowd oohed, you know, that was like the moment that, okay, it's every man for himself now. So from there on, I thought it was really good too, but no, I thought it was a good match. It was one that, again, I didn't have a lot of high expectations going into, but it exceeded those expectations, which was the theme of the show.
Yeah, I thought it was really good. Crowd was really into it and helped solidify it as a strong moment. I really loved. I put this over pretty big in my report as well. I loved the dichotomy between Randy Orton and Kevin Owens in the beginning, because I'm with you, Greg. I thought the build for this was strange and left a lot to be desired. I didn't really understand the purpose of going so heavy-handed with the Orton and KO friendship, and I wondered how it would translate into the match, just knowing that they would eventually have to come to blows. And I thought the way that they handled it was incredibly realistic and funny and very fitting for both of those guys. I mean, just fit their characters to a T. I love that Kevin Owens basically narrated the entire breakdown of their partnership, and asked Randy more than once if he was, you know, willing to forego a further beatdown of Logan Paul and just get it over with now. And Randy gave him a nod and we were off to the races. I thought that was really cool and creative, not something that you usually see. And then Paul was Paul. I mean, he did his usual stuff. He is uber impressive. And I thought that the bulk of the match was great. And then I like that they subverted the trope of having the heel just come in and steal the win in the end, but they teased it. It looked like Paul was going to steal the win from KO, but then he actually did a little offense so that it wasn't, or steal the win from Orton, sorry. But then he did a little offense so that it wasn't just a stolen cover. I like that.
Yeah. I think the match flowed very well, had a lot of creative and fun spots, and was an amazing match with very few low points, if any. Question six, which was your favorite entrance over both nights? Ooh. Let me think here. The Seth Rollins one was very Seth Rollins. I'll tell you that. the guy who sang Rhea Ripley's song scared me, so I can't give credit to that one.
Not a high point in the list of live performances at WrestleMania.
No, I thought Jade, Naomi, and Bianca had a really good entrance.
Yeah,
I'll be honest with you. I thought that, and I thought Rock had a really good entrance on night one. Those stand out to me, as well as Seth Rollins's. Drew had a cool entrance as well. I'm not huge on the heels, especially heels like McIntyre getting special entrances. I think that predominantly should be saved for the baby faces. I don't know, maybe I'm old fashioned, but so those would be the ones that stood out to me in particular. Am I missing any others stand out to you?
I'm going to highlight a few. I don't know that I can think of a favorite or pick a favorite quite yet anyway, but absolutely Jade, Bianca, and Naomi. I thought that was a really, really cool entrance. I thought the one that I had forgotten about that you mentioned was The Rock's. That one was great. And then tonight, I thought that the Drew and Seth ones were cool. But for me, it was Roman Reigns and Cody Rhodes. I thought that Cody's entrance was very corny, but also very Cody. It was
was
exactly what you would expect out of him, and it worked. And I think it was the atmosphere surrounding it. The crowd was just so ready for that match and so ready to come unglued. I noted in my report at the time that, the camera was positioned above Cody, like above Cody's knees as it followed him down the ramp. And you could see like the amount of adrenaline in that man's body. It looked like he was just floating down the ramp, because you could see it just pulsing out of his body. I could not imagine what had to be going through his mind in that moment. But I thought that was really cool. And then the Roman Reigns entrance, the entrance itself wasn't anything special, but that rendition of his theme by the Philadelphia Choir was incredible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was really well done. Fantastic job all around there. Question seven, who is Cody Rhodes' first opponent? So yeah, the fun thing about these post shows, Brandon, is the show is like not even 2 hours old, and everybody wants to know what's next.
Fernando's
everybody
still
wants
not
to look
out of
ahead.
The parking lot.
Poor Fernando. He's still sitting there. He's still reliving WrestleMania while everybody else wants to know what's ahead. So do you have anything else to, you know, I know we've talked at length about what's next for Cody and who the possibilities could be. You know, since that, is there anything that's popped into your head that makes you want to bring up any other names or any other directions you think they could go?
No, I don't think so. I think that I think the most intriguing one and the one that screams like, hey, let's try something on a B-level pay-per-view, it's still Carmelo Hayes.
John closes up with saying, I personally think Gunther would be a great one, even if they have to move him to SmackDown. Also, Logan Paul could be a great one in a champion versus champion feud. It's getting late. What can I say? JB from Detroit has our last email here. He says, now that Cody has finished the story, will his reign be as exciting and over as the chase for the title was? Yes, this is always something, you know, we love a good chase, but sometimes things can go awry once they're actually champion. And all of a sudden, it's the old adage of the dog catching the car, right? Now that he's got the car, what's he going to do with it? So, do you see this as – like, I think much of Cody's creative has been really good. So I don't really get the sense that there's going to be a drop-off, but I can see that being a concern just because so much emotion was expended in the chase. And now we've come to the realization, okay, he's got that title. Now what's next? He has the confidence of a champion already. Like, there's no transition. He doesn't now have to start acting like a champion and wearing – I mean, he's been in the mold of a champion for years. So there's not going to be that transition phase for his character. He's already there. But is there a risk that maybe – the championship reign disappoints compared to the high point that we experienced tonight?
Of course, there always is. And I think it think it's happened more often than not in recent years. I trust Triple H's creative to continue to carefully book Cody in a way to put him in the most advantageous of positions. But I think now that the story is finished and Cody is champion, they have the opportunity if the crowd turns. And I think this is a big if. I think that he, for at least the time being, is going to be able to ride on goodwill for quite a long while without much maintenance. But if that does run out, I mean, they do always have the ability to turn him. And I'm not obviously advocating for that anytime soon, but they can do it if they need to. It's not like Cody Rhodes can't play an effective heel.
Yeah, I mean, I hate to even consider that at this point. Like, when, you know, I'll save that for next week, next Sunday on Wrestling Night in America.
Yeah, I am certainly not advocating for it, and I don't want to see it happen, like, I mean, at least this calendar year. I mean, at bare minimum, but down the road.
Yeah. No, question number two from JB. Drew has to be winning the title back at Clash of the Castle, correct? Wouldn't surprise me if he won it before that. I think if he was a babyface, winning it at Clash of the Castle would be great, but if he's still in this heel character, then like I don't think it has to be that way, because I think in fact that could distract from the success he's having as a heel character in trying to present him to the live crowd as a babyface, which is what's going to happen. So, do you see that being a possibility, him winning at Clash of the Castle this year?
I do. I think that you could see. So we already have Rhea Ripley playing the tweener. You know, she's babyface in title defenses more often than not, and then she's heel when she's hanging around with the Judgment Day. They could theoretically follow a similar path with Damian Priest, so that on TV, on Raw every week, he's presented more as a babyface against Drew McIntyre, and then but they don't officially turn him the way that they haven't officially turned Rhea. So that come Clash at the Castle, when the crowd is unanimously behind Drew McIntyre, they don't have to scramble to kind of rewrite things, and they can just kind of go with it. So I could see them doing that, but I could see him, you know, getting the title before then. But then it's the question of who does he defend against? Like, is Punk ready at that point? And do you want to put babyface CM Punk against Drew McIntyre at that event? Probably not.
Question three, do you think there was any disappointment from the fan base that there was no Steve Austin involvement at Mania as was rumored? I think there could be some disappointment. WWE never outright advertised it or even really overtly advertised it, so I don't think you can really be mad at the things that people have cooked up in their minds about what might happen. But again, I think Austin would have been better in that role than Undertaker, but I consider that a nitpick of that segment. So it doesn't bother me enough to take anything away from what was done. What about you, Brandon? Do you think there was any, have you seen anything online about people disappointed? I see people pointing it out that, you know, that was the spot that was rumored for Austin, but I don't see a lot of necessarily what I would call disappointment with it.
I think if there's disappointment, it's probably more happening in hindsight, just realizing after the fact that, hey, like, Austin wasn't there, it was Taker instead, because the moment was so gratifying in the instant, and then the win was such an emotional high that fans have been waiting for such a long time, that I just didn't get the sense that there was anybody in that building that cared, but maybe there were some.
Mm-hmm. Next question, was it wise to end the historic reign of both Gunther and Roman on the same WrestleMania? I do think it was smart that they kept that way.
Yes.
Each could kind of have their own moment. But otherwise, mm-hmm. I don't think it was a mistake. That was something I considered at one point in the build-up, you know, kind of projecting out this WrestleMania and Gunther and Reigns and the potential of both of them losing their titles. And, you know, would one overshadow the other? Would Gunther's reign, you know, his loss be overshadowed by Roman's loss or anything like that? But I don't really think that was the case. I don't think it had any big effect. Did you?
No, and I thought, you know, having them on separate nights was beneficial, and also just the fact that their paths never crossed. I mean, Roman was pretty firmly on SmackDown throughout his run. Gunther was on Raw. They didn't really cross paths at all, and so their reigns, while similar in prowess, were never really spoken of in the same breath. So it never really felt like they were tied in any way.
And finally from JB, who was the dark horse star of the weekend? He says, as always, love the show and go VIP. PWTorch.com/go VIP. I'm assuming he's talking WrestleMania related because I've seen 1.5 shows on the periphery of WrestleMania, so I couldn't give a very good projection of that. I'm assuming we're not going to include NXT either because you could have anyone who was on that NXT star as a dark horse because nobody is talking about NXT a day after it happened. So I guess they would all be considered dark horses. You know, as for WrestleMania, I don't know, you know, maybe someone, you know, maybe Jade. I thought she did well for what was shown, and I think she didn't hurt her aura any in that match, and I think her star is a strong, you know, if you want to say Sami Zayn, maybe, because, you know, by the end of tonight, that win will take a backseat to Cody beating Roman Reigns, so maybe, but I don't know that there's anyone who qualifies in the traditional sense of the dark horse of this weekend.
Well, I dogged him earlier, so I'll build him back up now. I mean, I would say it's Damian Priest. I mean, you know, he's world champion now. I that certainly had crossed my mind as a possibility coming into the weekend, but I wouldn't have painted it as likely. So if you're speaking strictly from like a kayfabe perspective of like who benefited the most and rose up the card the most based on their achievement or performance at WrestleMania, I think it's Damian Priest. I mean, if we're just talking about like on a meta level, like from a more analyzation perspective, like as far as whose star power was built or who had like a great wrestling performance, I don't know that there's anybody that really stands out in a big way. I think if we're just talking like within the confines of WWE storytelling, then it's 100% Damian Priest for me. If we're going the other route, then I would side with you and say Jade, because I think you're right. They built her aura.
Another email we just got in, and we got one more phone call, then we'll get off the air here. It's getting late. This is from Dean Az. He says, how has anyone not mentioned the distracting face signs opposite of the hard cam? The guy in the center who kept raising his face signs every chance he could was super distracting and kind of ruined the viewing experience for me. Perhaps we can get #ban face signs trending if enough of us agree. The only time that was really a distraction for me, I think there was somebody was going face to face in the main event, and I don't know if it was Taker Rock or if it
Rock
was Cody Reigns or if it was it was Rock Cena. Then I could see them, but it was like they did something with the camera so that they kind of blurred it out. They focused on the near part. So that made it less distracting. The fact that they were able to blur the far of the lens. And I'm not technical. I don't know how they do that, but it seemed like they did this. So that was the only time that I really noticed it as a major distraction. Was it more distracting for you?
Just in that moment. That was it. I mean, I saw it. Don't get me wrong. I saw it throughout the night. And somebody had a Cody head too, which, you know, felt a little bit more fitting, given that he was part of the show. But the only time it was super distracting was that Rock Cena face off.
We got two now on hold. This is Freddie P from Hollywood, I think. Freddie, is that you?
Yo, what's up, Brandon? What's up, Greg? Sorry for calling in late. I just got back from a party watching WrestleMania with the boys. But, yes, it is me to answer your question.
Awesome. Well, good to hear from you. What did you think of Night 2 of WrestleMania?
Oh, wow. I thought last night was really, really good, but I thought tonight was exceptional. I thought that, you know, keeping it under 4 hours, I believe it was a little bit under 4 hours or maybe. It was definitely shorter than last night, which I think was a good thing. And then just from start to finish, that that Seth Rollins and Drew McIntyre start off was epic, and then, you know, Damian Priest cashing it, all epic. Can't wait to listen back to the show. I literally just called in. No, it's late, so I'll keep it brief. The one thing that I could think at the end when Cody was celebrating, you know, with everyone coming in and all the emotional stuff like that, it just really reminded me of Shawn Michaels, you know, sort of the boyhood dream kind of victory with all the emotion and storytelling. So I just wanted to know from you guys, do you guys see any similarities to that? And if not, is there anything you would compare that to? I had some friends there saying they thought it was the greatest WrestleMania win, you know, in history, you know, with just all of the interferences and then, you know, with the post-match celebration. But, you know, in the moment, it's a little, obviously, it can be a little bit heightened. But to me, I sort of thought back to when Shawn Michaels won, you know, and it was the boyhood dream type thing. So what do you guys think? Thanks, and I'll just listen.
Awesome. Thank you, Freddie. I think the main difference is the people backstage probably actually like Cody. I'm not sure that Shawn Michaels was very well liked at that time. You know, his backstage issues are very well documented, and if you go VIP, you can read all about them in the past issues of the Torch newsletter. So that would be my main difference. But it did have the same, you know, in Cody. Cody's had, you know, Sean had the father figure of Jose Lothario, but Cody had his real dad. I mean, that was his inspiration. It was his dad never being able. So I think the story that was told in the Cody Rhodes buildup was a lot deeper than the Shawn Michaels build, even though there were, on the surface, similarities between the two. I think there are some pretty big differences as well.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly understand the comparison. For me, I think it's its own thing. I mean, it stands sort of as its own thing, in part because Roman had such a historically epic reign that was talked about and revered in a way that we haven't seen really in this era or several eras prior. I mean, even dating back to the time when Shawn won in 96. So we're talking about Cody winning and putting an end to a really historic reign. So it felt like it was a moment that stood really on its own to me. I guess if I were to compare it to any, just in terms of pure fan ecstasy and enjoyment, it felt most comparable, I guess, to Daniel Bryan's win at WrestleMania 30.
Yeah, in terms of that emotion.
Yeah.
All right, we'll close things out with our final phone call of the evening. It is Sean from Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Sean, welcome to Wrestling Night in America. What did you think of WrestleMania tonight?
Greg and Brandon, good to talk to you guys. I just wanted to get on real quick. I'm late getting on, too. I was at a friend's house myself. Got to enjoy with friends both nights of WrestleMania. It was a fun – overall, it was just a really good WrestleMania, just all the way around. I really enjoyed tonight. Night two was better for sure. I guess the big takeaways were, you know, a lot of people would say, you know, that the Cody-Roman, the match was overbooked. But I honestly don't really think so. I was amazed that they got as much one-on-one time as they did. So for me, even though I wouldn't have had – I didn't understand the Taker stuff. You know, I really didn't. Actually, when he first came out, I was like, I don't really get that. Like, it doesn't – he's not with the Bloodline. There's nothing with him in the Bloodline. Yeah, him and Rock, it's a – you know, you could say it's a cool moment, but it was like it just didn't help the match in any way. So I was like, okay, I can understand why people were upset about that. But overall, Cody just – to me, I've said this to so many people, and I've said this on probably this show many times, Cody is just genuine to me, and it just felt like a great moment, him winning tonight. It really did. And hearing his press conference afterwards, getting to listen to it, he just wants this, and he's just done so hard to work for it and to get back where he is. And I'm just happy for him. Honestly, just as a fan, I'm happy for him. And I hope now this is the time where we see what he does, and hopefully he will continue to go on the road that I think he'll go on, to where nobody will want to turn on him, because he's just a genuine face, and now we'll see what heels come for him next, and you can talk about that, you know, later on, and we'll kind of have those conversations. But the big thing I took away from too was, real quick, I wanted to hear your thoughts on this if you haven't already talked about it, but I was really worried when Bayley and Io were on before the main event. I was worried for them because the build to the match for some people hasn't been very good. And to me, it's been okay. It's been all right. But when you're before the main event like that, and it's already been a long, you know, long night, long weekend, I didn't know what the reaction was going to be for them. But the crowd was into that match, and it was a really fun match. I really enjoyed that a lot. I'm excited for Bayley. I think she's in a better spot now, and I think I'm curious to see. I wanted to ask you what you thought of the match. Were you surprised at the reaction they got? And what are some heels other than maybe Dakota? Where do you think some heels that there will be to go against Bayley? Because I think Bayley can get on a good track again, but I don't know what matches she'll have next. So what do you think of the reaction? And again, where do you think she goes next from here?
It does kind of feel like she has to stay within damage control. I think Dakota Kai is a really interesting opponent for her. I was against the Dakota Kai turn to begin with, but I do like how she's developed as the leader of damage control. I'm a big Dakota Kai fan, so her getting that opportunity I think is good. And I would imagine she gets a shot at Bayley sooner rather than later. You know, we did talk about the match, but we didn't really spend a lot of time talking about the reaction. I was surprised too, Brandon, quite frankly. Not so much because of its placement on the card, but just because, you know, this is the type of match that may kind of get lost in the shuffle. You know, after Bayley's turn, the build was kind of so-so from here on out, but I was, you know, at worst I expected it to be maybe a decent reaction, but the crowd was super into it. They were singing Bayley's song, and at that point you were like, okay, they're into this. So I was really pleasantly surprised by that. You know, the show didn't go too long, so I don't think I wasn't ready to blame a bad crowd reaction on that, just because, you know, we've seen much longer from other companies and from WWE in the past, and I thought they kept tonight reasonably length so that there really wasn't any of that, you know, the crowd think, you know, let's get to the main event, or, you know, it's too late, we're going to sit on our hands or anything like that. So, Brandon, were you surprised at all that the match got such a strong reaction?
No, because they set the precedent last night with putting Sammy and Gunther in that spot, and I thought that was a risk. They subverted the traditional booking philosophy with WrestleMania with these big stadium shows, in that you typically want to put a quote unquote bathroom break in between two of your big matches at the end. You know, sandwich something smaller there at the end. That gives the fans a chance to come down before your main event to allow them to rebuild some stamina. And they didn't do that last night or tonight. They put two big matches in that penultimate spot with Sammy and Gunther last night, and then Bayley and Io tonight. And I thought the reactions to Sammy and Gunther last night probably made them feel pretty confident about where they had Io and Bayley tonight. And I think in addition to that, they probably felt even more confident just based on the fact that tonight was a shorter card overall. They had one less match. The Hall of Fame segment seemed like it was truncated a bit, and I thought that was a good move overall, a smart production choice, because typically that segment tends to drag a bit. So I think that they felt confident in the fact that this wasn't going to be an overly long show, and they didn't expect, just based on the way that they had the matches laid out, they were confident that they had good matches and solid action, but not that they were going to tire out the crowd to a point that they weren't going to be able to come up for Bayley and Io. Now, as far as the reaction to the match itself, aside from just the notion that, you know, having it in that spot, I thought they were confident with it. I mentioned this earlier to Greg, and Sean, you're hearing it now, I assume, for the first time. But I think the biggest thing that led to the kind of reaction that this got is that, to me, it felt like it was like a sort of a joyous exhale, a sigh of relief, if you will, and like a moment where the crowd was granted permission to cheer for Bayley again. And I think that they have been waiting for that opportunity, because there's no question that B turned heel at the right time. And like I mentioned earlier, carried a lot of those early pandemic shows with Sasha Banks in a really big way. But we've built to a point where that character had run its course, and it's time to see if this iteration of Bayley can sink or swim as a babyface. I just think that they had the right confluence of circumstances where the crowd was just really ready to accept Bayley as a babyface. And not only that, they limited her exposure on television in the lead up to WrestleMania as well, and strategically put her in a lot of video packages to sort of build up anticipation for her first official arrival as a babyface.
Anything else for us tonight, Sean?
No, that was pretty much it. Like I said, I wanted just to bring out, you know, talk to you guys and let you guys know you guys do a great job. I always enjoy your shows. I thank you for what you guys do for the Torch. I'm thankful I have the platform for all of us to be able to come out and, you know, talk about what we love. And that's, you know, this year's WrestleMania, which we were excited about. And I think it lived up to the billing overall. And I'm excited to see what they do tomorrow night. I thank you guys very much. I know it's late. I appreciate you guys taking my call and letting me talk about Mania.
All right, Sean. Thank you so much for calling in. Always love to hear your perspective on it. Brandon, Street Profits and Lashley defeating AOP and Karrion Kross, Bubba Ray Dudley, the surprise referee, Snoop Dogg on commentary, a lot more entertaining than I expected. Snoop Dogg was hilarious, not that I ever want to hear him on commentary again, but for one time it's kind of like the Sami Zayn Johnny Knoxville match. It was great once, but I don't think I ever want to see it again. Same thing with the shenanigans. So that was another one of those matches that I thought exceeded my expectations, admittedly low expectations. Same thing with LA Knight and AJ Styles. Like, I didn't have high expectations for that. It exceeded those expectations. So anything else you want to comment on about those matches before we close up for the night?
Yeah, I liked LA Knight and AJ Styles. I thought it was better than what I expected. It wasn't a great match, but it was certainly good enough. I thought that they had about the right amount of time. They didn't overstay their welcome. They got in, they did their thing, and it worked for what it was. The six-man, the street fight, I'm a little bit lower on. It felt to me like, for one, the crowd was heavily distracted by whatever was going on at the time. As Fernando mentioned, there were some issues with lighting and with the screens in various areas of the stadium. And to me, that was really distracting during that match. It felt like they weren't paying attention to the action in the ring, and they were focused on trying to better their experience overall so that maybe they could pay attention to the action in the ring. So I thought that match was hurt quite a bit by that, but it just felt really hollow. I mean, it was just a bunch of the Authors of Pain beating down the Street Profits with kendo sticks, and then, you know, we got the wacky Dudley Boys stuff with the Street Profits, and they went to a finish. It felt like it was there to fill time and get six guys on the card, and I didn't care for it.
So, Brandon, that is the two nights of WrestleMania. I know you'll be back after AEW Dynasty later this month to recap that show and take phone calls and emails on that. But until then, let fans know when they can hear from you again, when they can read your reports, and where they can follow you on social media.
Sure. You can follow me on Twitter at TheLeClaire12, and I cover WWE premium live events and AEW pay-per-views for PW Torch. You can find my alt perspective reports on all those shows on both the regular PW Torch site and the VIP side. And then, of course, after those shows, I join you, Greg, right here on Wrestling Night in America.
Brandon, always a pleasure. Thanks for staying up late with us tonight.
Of course.
And you can find me on Twitter at Greg M. Parks. You can find my work each and every week in the Torch newsletter, full-page column, as well as my Greg Parks Out Loud audio show for VIP members, pwtorch.com/govip. We're right here next Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, as we are each and every Sunday. There's not a pay-per-view, so we'll be building up AEW Dynasty next week. So thanks for joining us over the last couple days, two nights in a row of Wrestling Night in America. And I hope you'll join us again next Sunday, 8 p.m. Eastern, because if it's Sunday, it is Wrestling Night in America.